Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to Health and Safety Conversations. Here's your host, Tom Bourne.
Hi, and welcome to Health and Safety Conversations. I'm your host, Tom Bourne, and with me today is the marvelous Sally Prosser. Sally, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Sally, where are you coming from today?
From beautiful Brisbane, where the air con is still cranking. The humidity has been crazy lately.
Oh, dear. And is it beautiful sunshine again?
It looks quite overcast at the moment, but really muggy. Mm. So I don't know why I'm wearing long sleeves and black. It's probably not conducive to the conditions at the moment.
Yeah. Well, it's looking out the window, it's about, I'd say, 24 degrees every day in summer in Perth. Is beautiful blue skies. So
perfect, beautiful.
We can't complain. And you're coming over to Perth's not too distant future.
Yeah, coming over there on the 15th of March.
Fantastic. What's that for?
So I'm coming over actually for the Professional Speakers Association conference. So their national conference is there this year. And I am using the opportunity to run an event with my Perth clients and anybody else who'd like to join, which is called Speak Up for Your Business. So it's a session where we'll go through how to explain who you are and what you do with confidence so you can really put your best foot forward or put your best voice forward, I'd like to say.
Great, great. Now, Sally, you are very well known. In fact, you were on my, I won't say hit list, but you were on the people that I would like to come on the show.
Wouldn't be the first, Tom.
for a long time, but glad you're here. But for those who've been living under a rock for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years or so, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your professional journey so far?
Yes, I would love to. So I feel like I was born microphone first. I've loved speaking ever since I was young. So I did all of the debating and public speaking and all that kind of thing growing up, and then went into journalism. So one of my first jobs was reading the news at a local radio station in Wollongong, 96.5 Wave FM, shout out. And then progressed from radio news reporting into television news reporting. And I've worked for Channel 7, 10, and the ABC. And then it sounds quite diverse, but it's quite common for a lot of journalists to go into public relations. They call it crossing to the dark side, although even though I did prefer PR, actually. And I was the spokesperson. Well, actually, let me rephrase. I was the glamour girl for the city's water and sewerage company. Telling people what they should and shouldn't flush. It was a really, really great job. So I did that for about 5 years and then have been running this business full time since then, which is all about voice and public speaking. And if I look back at my career, that's really been the thread that's gone through everything that I've done. Even when I missed one of my jobs, which was spruiking outside of a shop in the mall. I don't even know if they exist anymore. But you know,
they do.
Do they? Yeah, I remember I was at the shop like talking about these awful cardigans. It was challenging, but all the jobs I've been using my voice in some way.
Oh dear. I couldn't think of anything worse than standing outside a jewelry shop, for example. I see him these days spruiking, come on in, we've got 30% off. And watching the crowd walk past and not pay you any attention.
Not being paid attention was not kind of the worst thing. And this is a great takeaway for any kind of speaking. It's about believing in what you're saying.
Mm.
When you really believe in what you're saying, the words flow so much easier and you can hear it. I was talking about these horrible cardigans. I would have been better off offering people $20 to like not come in the store rather than saying that these cardigans are only $20 because they were so bad. So I think people could pick up in my voice that I wasn't, you know, overly impressed with what I was selling.
I was going to say, how do you get in, you know, enthused about speaking and, you know, believe in what you're speaking when you're talking about things that you can and cannot flush down toilets?
Well, Tom, you'd be surprised how fascinating the sewerage network is. Like, it really is the cornerstone of a developed country, and the water and sewerage network does more for any city than every doctor and nurse put together.
Yeah.
So that's what I liked about working for an essential service. So even though it was not great, like dinner date conversation, and it coincided at a time in my life when I was single as well. So it was like, you know, not very palatable when they're like, what do you do? And here I am talking about like flushing habits. But being an essential service, it's really important for people to feel faith in their water service. And, you know, when water was out for any reason, it was important for people to know what was happening.
Mm.
And that's what really underpinned my enjoyment of that role. If it was PR for maybe something like an alcohol company or gambling or something like that, I don't think I would have been able to do it. But because, you know, as a person, I really care about this essential infrastructure and people having access to it and clear knowledge about it, I was, yeah. See, I haven't been there for 5 years and I should still be on the payroll.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. It's strange. Last January, I spoke to Peter Gould, who's the safety, I guess you'd say the safety guy in charge of urban utilities there, and he told me that the most common thing flushed down the toilet in Brisbane that shouldn't be flushed is Broncos jerseys. I was just like, oh, I can understand that, really.
Oh, well, you know, after the grand final, we were in New Zealand at the time and there was no station that was showing it, but they were sort of doing a minute-by-minute play online. So I was asleep and my partner's next to me and he read the whole entire match as it was being, you know, live updated. So very, very heartbreaking day.
Oh, dear. Now, one of the things that I brought you on for is it's one of these marvellous skills that all leaders should have, whether they're in safety, whether they're in, you know, supervisory position, managers, anything where they've tried to influence people, is public speaking is a skill. But consistently when you read what people are scared of the most in life, it's not divorce, it's not moving or anything like that. The most stressful and feared thing is public speaking. What do you think that is?
Oh, because public speaking is an invitation for us to face our greatest fears.
Mm.
And this is why it's so powerful, because people aren't afraid of the speaking itself. We speak every day. What it is in the particular scenario, it's like a pressure point where existing fears and insecurities boil over. The fear of being seen, the fear of being heard, the fear of being rejected, the fear of being found out. And so it brings up all of these things. And this is why a lot of people successfully go through life and avoid public speaking. It's kind of like avoiding facing their issues. And alternatively, it's why when people do push through that fear, work with the fears, speak in a not even a comprehensive way necessarily, but learn how to use their voice, it's not just the value that the audience is getting, it is the self-healing, which is something not a lot of people think about. So with my clients, sure, I help them with interviews they're doing or conference presentations. actually a lot of people in the safety industry I help with conference presentations and workshops and things like that. But the byproduct is huge personal growth.
Yeah, I know for me, the first 2 years I had to present anything, you know, speak in front of even small groups, absolute terrifying. I used to get sweat under my armpits, you know, halfway down my sides. I used to shake like a leaf. I never used to be able to look people in the eyes. And I quite often have a tremor in my voice as well.
Yeah, because the breathing would tighten up. Yeah.
And used to dread what people were thinking and stuff like that. And yeah, these were people I actually knew and kind of, I don't know, spent years with before it happened. So is that a common thing?
Oh, Tom, it's extremely common. So common. The most powerful voice we have is the voice in our head. It's that inner voice. It's the inner voice that drives the physical voice. And it's very difficult to present when that's at 100 miles an hour going, well, what are people thinking? Oh, you look stupid. Oh, my gosh, you're sweating. Are you making any sense? Did that joke land? When's this going to end? Right? With all of this going on, it can be really difficult to speak. You know, this is the thing. We can never, one of my favorite quotes is, other people's opinion of you is none of your business. And we can put ourselves into a frenzy by trying to guess what everybody is thinking. And most people are just thinking about themselves and everybody's thinking about something different. Yeah. But you've touched on something really great there. You know how you said you were shaking and you're like shaking like a leaf and feeling the sweat. The number one tip I would give is that speaking is physical and our voice lives in our body. But what happens is when we present, or when a lot of people present, it goes straight to the head. Like I was saying, like all those thoughts come in and you get disconnected from the body, and that's why you lose the breath. So you get the shake, you're not moving that energy through. So you might get like the sweats or the shaking. So before speaking, honestly, like stamping your feet, shaking your hands, moving your shoulders, having a little dance party. Yeah. It's one of the best things you can do so you can get back in your body to be able to share your message. Because when the voice is coming from deep within you, you know, a lot of people think the voice is here or here, whereas the voice is this channel that runs all the way through our body.
Yeah.
And the more we can connect with it lower down, I often say lower down because normally it's like, you know, up high. Some people even say they have like an out-of-body experience. The more we can get into the body, then the breathing calms down, the muscles relax, and the whole presentation is a much more enjoyable experience for everyone.
Yeah. When you present, do you occasionally, I fall into that, it's a really bad habit of going, okay, I start categorizing people and going, you're this and you're that and you're this. And I know I shouldn't. And most of the time I can get out of that. But there are sometimes, particularly when I'm tired, I start to put people in categories and start addressing them a particular way. Is that something that you as an experienced facilitator, presenter actually do? You look at the audience and go, right, that's that, this is this, this is how I'm going to deal with this, this is where I direct my attention over here, et cetera.
What sort of categories are you putting people in?
Oh, you're the distracted one. You're the one. You're the one that is really hyped and really hope, really hanging on every word. You're the person I've got to do because there's something bothering you. You just don't want to be here. Okay, fantastic. I've got to work something out for you. You know, just trying to sort people so I know where to direct the attention and the appropriate amount of attention. Mm.
Yeah. So there's two things here. The first one is, yes, being able to work out your audience is a really good skill to have. And you want to do it from a place of feeling empowered. And we'll go to that in a second. But if you're really torn between trying to categorize everybody, it can become very distracting. In saying that, especially if you are facilitating, it's important to know where people are at. What I would do is look for a friend of mine, Simone Heng, who's another speaker, and she speaks about this, is look for your lighthouses. So rather than categorize everybody, I look for the lighthouses. And as you say, they're the ones who are paying attention. They're nodding, they're smiling, they're picking up what you're putting down. They're giving you that encouraging feedback. Because often the human mind will go to the person who's like on their phone, looks like they couldn't care less, rather than the person who's really interesting or interested. So I pick the lighthouses. Then the second part of this is when you walk into a room, set the energy instead of get the energy. Set the energy instead of get the energy. Because I remember once presenting to it was Schneider Electric, right? And of course they do shift work, and the workshop was 6 a.m. So the 6 a.m. start off the back of a night shift. So can you imagine off the back of a night shift, people walking into a public speaking workshop for 4 hours? Like, honestly, like, why would you want to be there? Now, I walked into that room and, yeah, you could sense people didn't want to be there, understandably. And if I had have come in there and responded to that really negative, I want to go home energy, then it would have just amplified that feeling and made the experience worse. Whereas, and, you know, this goes for any audience. If you maintain your energy as being excited and interested and just feeling good about what you're saying, then that will be picked up. In saying that, I did turn the 4-hour workshop into 3 hours.
Yes.
And that, you know, that got me brownie points.
Yes. All right. It's really interesting because I'm maybe putting safety a little bit in the back seat here, because I'm just enjoying talking about facilitating and presenting.
It's so important for safety, because this is why I work with so many safety professionals, because communication is such a big part of it. It's how do you get the change or the procedure or whatever it is communicated to the people who need to hear it. And then also the other way around, how are things communicated back? You know, if we're trying to move away from like a blame culture, that all comes down to the language used and the communication. So we're in the same field.
Yeah. I first of all, I say 100% agree with you about the energy. It really is. I used to tell people, you know, afternoon, they've had food, their metabolism's kicking in, slowing down. You know, you actually have to bring the energy. You can't expect it from your group. You actually, if there's no energy, you bring the energy and you make that energy. But that's good. Just a couple of things. And this is me being absolutely genuinely curious. We tend to tailor messages based on our audience, and, you know, that we have the message we have to deliver, and but how we deliver it is based on the audience characteristics in front of us. However, sometimes I see people with specific groups, they'll change the direction, the language, and the message, important messages, just to suit a group, like, for example, all male, middle-aged things. And then you have the same people who will struggle to present that message to a group of workers which are, you know, 50% female. Should it really matter who we're presenting to if we're delivering a truthful and influential message?
Yeah, 100%. You know, the person with the greatest flexibility of behavior rules the system. So that's like an NLP concept. And I grew up in Wollongong. And it's funny because, like, some people say, oh, you're just a bogan from the gong. Yet other people are like, well, Sal, you're quite like a posh put together presenter. And I joke that you want to have a voice that can take you from the bolo to the boardroom. You want to have that flexibility of behavior where you can change for the audience and for the context. And you can think about it in terms of a wardrobe of clothes. Because there are some people that say, well, this is my voice and this is my message and I don't care and this is what I'm coming in with. But that's the same as saying, well, I look great in activewear and no matter where I go or who I talk to, I'm going to wear my activewear, right? And I mean, for a lot of like online life during COVID, that was probably completely fine. But if we think about it, if you're at the gym or going for a walk, you're going to look great. But if you're turning up to business meetings, if you're turning up to a black tie ball or, you know, a whole lot of situations, you possibly wouldn't make the best impression you could in that outfit. So you want to go, all right, well, I've got my active wear, I've got my professional suit, I've got my dress, I've got my, you know, all the different things. And they're all 100% you. So this is where I think it's a little bit unclear for some people. They feel like they have to change themselves. Whereas it's more about just putting a different outfit on that is still 100% you, but it's going to make a better impression in the scenario. So for me, my message is always speak with confidence and use your voice. When I am in rooms of all women, there are different things that I'll put in compared to rooms with all men, compared to business owners or professionals, depending what they're using their voice for. I did a great presentation, one of my favorites last year, which was for dance teachers. So I was like, oh, Tom, yes. And so my opening of my talk was me choreographing the lessons I was going to teach through a dance. Amazing. But I don't think it would have gone down quite so well if I had have walked into, you know, my engineering firm.
Yeah,
if I got them all to start dancing, that it wouldn't have been great. I had to change my approach.
Yeah, yeah.
So does that answer your question? I'd really encourage people to have that flexibility of behavior and communication. And if you feel like you're coming up against a wall, then this is why investing in speaking and communication coaching is so valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Do you ever find that the best approach to some situations where you have to deliver uncomfortable news or uncomfortable things, that it's just basically better, instead of putting the fairy floss on things and making things all cheerful, to just come out and tell the unfortunate truth that people are expecting anyhow?
Do you mean kind of like maybe negative feedback in a work situation?
Like, for example, when people are sent to mandatory training that they can't see a relevance to. There's been occasions where, and it's maybe not as 100% professional, where I go, okay, who wants to be here? Good, I'd figured that, but we have to do this, so let's just get on and do it. Yeah. Again, it's not actually pumping it up and going, yeah, this is awesome. Mm. It's just a reality of, okay, you don't want to be here. That's fine. We're still going to do it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I work with teams so much on this very issue, and the language around, oh, well, we've you know, lump it or leave it, we've got to be here, it's mandatory, can, similar to that energy exchange, amplify this kind of feeling, which is why it's really important for leaders to be able to articulate the reasons behind things.
Mm.
You know, so rather than go, oh, this is the training, why are you doing the training? Why do people need to be there? Why is it important? And in health and safety, there's so many stories that can demonstrate why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking to that core, like the emotional motivation is so important. Same with people go, oh, why am I at a public?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Speaking workshop, which is why I always start with, why is this important to you? How is this going to make your life easier? How is this going to improve your relationships and improve your results? And I would say to leaders, it can be a bit of tough love sometimes. If you can't clearly articulate why you're doing something, then you don't understand it yourself.
Yeah.
And with middle managers, a lot of the time, Tom, I'm sure you'd see this as well, they're kind of stuck in this shit sandwich, if I'm allowed to say, where it's kind of like, well, they're told they have to do it. So they're just kind of passing it down to the next
level.
And I would say if you're in that situation, you know, be the change. Just why are you doing the training? At Urban Utilities, I remember I got hounded because I hadn't done my online fatigue management training. So it was this online thing where I had to talk about sleep and all of, I mean, you would understand this more than me, Tom, probably. I don't know if I got good marks for it, but it was about fatigue management.
Yeah.
Anyway, finally, it was like I'd been escalated to my boss, and my boss said, Sal, you got to do this training. You got an X against your name. So I stayed back one day and did this online training. The very next week, we had an incident, water and sewage, right? There was a couple of really bad bursts all over the city. Someone in my team was away on holidays that day, so we were already short-staffed, and I had worked, I think, about 18 hours straight. So I'd been called out in the middle of the night to go to the incident management team that had been stood up, and I was to a point where they're like, Sal, you got to go home. And I was like, yeah, I got to go home. It was far too many hours. So I got home, you know, put my hard hat on the table. When you're in media, you have like your own hard hat that you've got ready to take out. Had a shower, crawled into bed. And you know, when you're like, I was that level of tiredness, you know, like kind of that jet lag feeling.
Yep.
Where I just, my body could barely get to the bed. I put my head down and the phone rang. And I ignored it because I'm like, oh, you know. It rang again. I answered it. They said, Sal, we've got a news crew at a burst in a suburb in Brisbane. There's no one else. You got to go there. They need someone to interview. So I said, you realize that, you know, I'm breaking every single rule in the fatigue management plan.
Yep.
But it didn't matter. There was no one else. I had to get myself up, get redressed, get in a cab, get to the place, talk to the control room on the way there, and then stand there and do an interview that was televised nationally. Yeah. Now, potentially the lesson there is, you know, let's get some depth in our spokespeople, which is something that we were trying to do, but there was just nobody who was ready to be able to perform at that level with that short notice. You know, but it did make the whole online fatigue management training completely farcical.
Yes.
So speaking of personal experience, this is, I think, what safety managers are up against.
True. I just noticed you use the pause so well, the power of the pause, where you actually stop and come up for air. A lot of facilitators I've met never, ever master just stopping and pausing and holding. How do you convince people to get past that discomfort of silence?
You said it right there, Tom. Discomfort of silence. So it's the relationship that people have with the pause. It's the story, right? It's all about the speaking story. If I pause, that means it's awkward. That means people will think I don't know what I'm talking about. They'll get bored. So there's all these negative associations with the pause. Whereas for me, oh my gosh, I'm in love with the pause. When we speak, the most powerful thing we have is our breath. Our voice is powered by our air. And we can only breathe in when we're pausing. You can't breathe in while you're speaking. This is why also people that don't pause, the quality of their voice will wane. Yes. It's kind of like a car. I don't really watch motorsports or anything, but it's like they have their pit stop so they can stay at the optimum performance.
Mm.
And with us, that's what the pause does. Like when we pause, we breathe in, we refuel, and the next part can sound just as good. The pause is a chance for people to lean in.
Yeah.
Right? We actually, it helps us gain attention. Remember back in when TV ads were on, and if there was an ad that was silent, like everyone would like look.
Yep.
because our ear catches silence more than it catches like regular speaking. And then also it's a gift for our audience to absorb what we're saying. Yeah. So when we're speaking about our subject matter expertise, like everything I'm saying today in today's interview is stuff that I talk about every day. I could just keep going and going. Yet for a lot of people listening to this, it might be the first time that they're hearing these kind of concepts.
Yep.
So you've got to give people a bit of a chance for it to sink in.
Yeah.
So love the pause. Learn to love the pause.
Absolutely. And I'd suggest using the pause also. When you're actually throwing out questions to people to try and get a bit of interaction, a bit of engagement, one of the things I find most facilitators, presenters hate doing is they'll throw a question up in the air and they'll only give it like about a second and a half, because all of a sudden the question they've thrown out there is about the topic they've just been talking about. No one answers. And they go, oh, my God, no one's listening. This is really embarrassing. I better answer it myself, because everyone's now going, what the hell are you talking about? It's really hard for people to actually just let it dwell.
And asking the right questions. So I do a lot of facilitating, and I've experienced every single scenario under the sun, especially if you're online. It can be like pulling teeth trying to get any semblance of interaction, right? It's the way that you phrase it as well. So often asking big open-ended questions are not going to get a response.
Mm.
So even what do you think about that? Mm. It's probably not going to get a response. So if you've got a crowd like that or an audience like that, I always start with a very easy sort of yes or no. And so it might even be, is that something, do we, who agrees with that? And then you give the cue of your hand going up, who agrees with that? And then you'll get some hands. And then you can ask the next layer of question. So if we're sort of giving really big open-ended questions and then not leaving a pause for people to answer, it's just tough work for people. You know, like I know on social media, when I ask for a full-on comment, I hardly get anything. But if you put a poll up where people just have to click, you get a lot more interaction. So I would say really make it easy for people to answer. And one more tip on that is don't give abstaining as an option. Don't give abstaining as an option. So even for online, I won't say, how are we feeling? I'll say, all right, in the chat, I want to see a number from 1 to 10, how you're feeling. 1 is you really don't want to be here. 10 is you're ready to go. Everybody, I want to, you know, so it's like no opportunity to do nothing.
Volume of speech, volume of voice, important?
Absolutely. It's the... Going soft is actually really good, because it's sort of, and leaning in, it lets people know that you've kind of got a secret.
Yep. Yep.
And then loud for the contrast, it's the highs, it's the lows.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking about like operating at heights, you know, you're starting on the ground, you need to get your safety right on the ground, because once you're up the top, so see how the voice demonstrates, it helps paint that picture.
Yep.
Then there's the pace, right? So you really want to slow it down when you're talking about the past. People are accessing their memory, reflecting.
Yeah.
You know, so if we look back on our results from last year, you'll see a really interesting pattern emerging. And we really want to keep that going for next quarter. Yep. And then go faster for the future, because it's about excitement, right? So this is like the crux of what I do, Tom. So I love speaking about this, but it's really helping people understand that their voice and the way that you use it is such a powerful tool. And most people are just walking around with a default voice of, this is just what I say and how I say it, which is like learning how to play piano, but like having a whole piano and only ever hitting on one key. Yes. Every day I'm just going to go ding, 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 ding. Whereas once you learn how to play, whoa. That's when you can fill a concert hall and have people really engaged with what you're saying. So I would say, you know, even starting small, if you feel like, if you're listening to this going, oh my gosh, Sal, like I've literally never thought about my voice until today, then start off with like Mary Had a Little Lamb. Just start with, you know, can you go a bit higher and a bit lower? Can you just start putting in a couple more pauses? You know, what are the tiny things that we can be adding that are really going to make a difference to the way people hear us? Because one more stat I've got to throw in communication, only 7% is the words we say.
Yeah.
38% is our tone of voice. And then the big one, which goes back to what we spoke about earlier, 55% is our body language, is our physiology.
Yep.
You know, so if you're feeling awkward, or if you think the audience is awkward, it's because you're feeling awkward. If you're feeling nervous and all over the place, that's what everyone will pick up on. Yeah. So before speaking, if you can get yourself into a state of calm and excitement and relaxation or whatever it is, that's the most powerful thing you can do, which is not madly looking over what you're going to say or worrying about your slide deck.
I got to tell you, I used to write out cards and then I'd get them mixed up in order and I'd drop cards and do all those.
Yeah.
You should throw them away. Just get rid of them altogether.
Yeah. Worrying about what to say is the biggest killer of connection. It's crazy, isn't it? You know, most people will spend their time going, I really want to remember what to say. As long as I remember what to say, then it's a success. When that is just completely false. And we've all experienced this where maybe you haven't spent as long preparing for a presentation or something, but you've been in a great mood. You've had a great morning, got up on the right side of the bed, got a great car park. And you just kind of walk in there and people can feel that energy. And even if you haven't practiced every single word, most of us, and I'm sure people listening, most of us are speaking about something that we live and breathe every day, something that we're passionate about.
Yeah. Oh,
it's disgusting, you know?
Yeah, this has been awesome. But I've actually learned something, so that's good. And I mean that absolutely genuinely because, you know, I like to go, I know a lot about everything. I know about this. No, I've actually learned something already, so that's good. All right. I feel like I've spoken a lot about that. So just got a little bit of time left. How, going back a decade or so when you were a journalist, what's some of the biggest risks journalists actually face in doing their job? Because I'm curious.
Yeah. You know what? The biggest risk is something that I didn't even know if that existed 10 years ago, and I'd say psychological safety. Psychological safety is the main one. I was speaking to a friend of mine who is a journalist this morning before this interview, and she said something so good to me. She said, it's not normal to spend so much time with people on the worst day of their life. You know, and for me, having had that distance between that career and now doing what I'm doing, I was completely disassociated. Like, because there's so much heavy stuff that does happen, I just thought that I was kind of like unfeeling and I was just like getting the job done, but it's not healthy to stay like that. And I have some friends that also say that they love crying. They really feel great when they cry at a story because it just shows them that they've still got that humanness there.
Is there a chance that journalists like police officers, like ambulance officers, and that may pick up vicarious trauma?
Oh, Tom, 100%. 100%. And I feel like that's an area, you know, the signs of PTSD, vicarious trauma, it's not recognized enough. And I can't speak for other first responders, so I'm not sure what the systems are in place. But in media, I feel like there could be more things done. You know, there have been stories of, you know, big stories happening where the newsroom says, right, we're going to have a debrief, you know, after a big natural disaster. But then life has got away, time has got away, and then that debrief never happens. Where you're given a number to call, you know, like, well, what's it called? The
EAP.
Yeah. So, you've got that. But then that might be okay for some more regular is not the word, but I guess some more common things. Yet with journalists, that it's often quite complex situations that can really only be understood by people who are really understand the industry. You know, I was also saying to my friend this morning, the phrase, if you don't feel comfortable, don't do it, is not one that you hear often.
No.
You know, and it's like not sort of, they would never say, if you don't feel comfortable, do it anyway. You know, I've been in a situation with, you know, knocking on the door of somebody who's, the family of somebody who's died, and they've said that they didn't want to speak anymore. I'd already spoken to them the day before, but then told, oh, well, Channel 9 speaking to them. Mm. You might want to go down, you might not want to go down a certain area. Oh, well, someone else is going. Or, well, it's in for the lead. It's in for the lead, yeah. Which is kind of the way of saying, well, you're going to be on air, so you better bring back something.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it is tricky. I mean, a part of the job is being able to go there and tell the story. But I definitely think in terms of psychological safety, there is a lot more that can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. All right. Lastly, you talked about being in debating and that led to journalism. Where did that confidence come from? Because I've got to be honest and say I'm an introvert, absolute introvert. But, you know, I talk to people and then I go and go, please don't talk. And no one talked to me. I don't want to see anyone. Don't want to do that. I just want to go in a hole for a few hours. And for me to be in a facilitation role, and I've done it for over a decade, it's taken a lot of work. But where did that initial confidence come from? Did it come from your home or your background? Because that's completely foreign to me.
Yeah, the first thing I'd say is, you know, some of the world's best public speakers are introverts. And introversion and extroversion is not relevant when it comes to being a good presenter. Mm. In fact, they would say, I'm an introverted extrovert, I would say, but we need more introverted speakers. Mm. Because often the extroverted ones are the loudest, and the loudest is not always the most valuable voice. So it's important to recognize that. The next thing would be, I'd say, energy management.
Yes.
So yes. Say, okay, I do facilitation as well. And when I do a full day facilitation, I don't have anything booked for that night.
Mm.
I really just chill out. And if my timetable allows, the whole next day will also be a very easy day. I call it a recharge day.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, rather than pushing it, and this goes for introverts and extroverts, it's really just managing your energy. And when you're just pushing and pushing and pushing, you're going to get to a point, especially when you have to speak, where things can explode. Like our voice is a channel. And often if there's been a buildup of stress or burnout or anything going on, it can just kind of like, it becomes the mouse that sank the boat. And the third part to that, Tom, I was going to add something else. How was I so confident? Well, apparently when I was like 8 years old, I wore this like hot pink bike pants and this little shirt and sang Billy Ray Cyrus, "Don't tell my heart, my achy breaky heart." I just don't think they understand, in front of everybody at Christmas. So you look at that and you say, right, yeah, I've always had that kind of love of performing, I think, which has stayed with me. But really, it has been the familiarity and the practice. So I've had a lot of great speeches. I've had a lot of speeches that have flopped, and they have not been in order. You know, even when I started my business, I did a speech for the CEO Institute, and two people told me it was so bad that I shouldn't start my business. And then I followed it up by doing a lecture at a university, a guest lecture, where there was a grand total of two people in the audience at the back on their laptops. And here I was trying to excite people about body language. And then finally, talk about getting someone to interact. Finally, at the end, hand goes up. I was like, yes! When's this going to be over? Like, literally, that was the question. So on that day, I was like driving my car going, I don't even know if I can do this. But then, of course, I can, and I did, and I do. And what all of those scenarios have given me is so much experience and practice to learn from. Like, I honestly believe one of the reasons I'm such a strong public speaker is because I've spoken on way more occasions than the average person. So a lot of people who are afraid of public speaking, because you've been avoiding, it's been avoided, it sort of builds up and they expect the first one to be really good.
Yeah.
you know, and I was on live radio as well. One of my first jobs was reading the news live on radio. And that was so challenging because it was live and on the half hour, especially this time of year, January. Oh my gosh, I used to have night terrors about pronunciation of names of tennis players.
Yes.
It's like, oh my gosh, one person says it that way, another person says it that way, and then you get all these this hate mail into the news, you know, into the thing going, oh, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. And so it sounds quite awful, but having just so much experience of failure and rejection and doors slammed in your face, and you know, even recently I went viral on TikTok and had lots of hate that way, it's been so good. Because all of this just makes you stronger and takes away the fear. You know, people say, oh, I'm afraid of what people think. Well, actually, you know what? I know that half people hate me and it's fine. Like, so what? Keep calm and carry on. Yeah. So that's what I would say. I'd say, you know, just get your runs on the board and don't expect everything to be perfect because it never will be. Every time we speak is just an opportunity to use our voice to share something valuable for the audience and to go full circle to the beginning of this chat, to heal ourselves.
Fantastic, fantastic. Sally Prosser, it's been a lot of fun for me, at least, and I've learned something, and I really thank you for coming on.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
But our time has just about run out. So thank you again, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Oh, my absolute pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Health and Safety Conversations with Tom Bourne. Until next time, stay safe and enjoy the rest of your week.